welcome to this reading of City View, an alternative monthly published in Des Moines. I'm your reader, Scott Splavik. This reading is the third episode from the December issue of City View. Our first article today is entitled Civic Skinny, and it's written by City View staff. DART funding concerns, campaign donation totals, business record subscribers, and lung cancer. DART recently released information on how much Des Moines and the surrounding communities contribute to the public transportation service. They say a 40% cut to their services is looming if additional funding is not received. Des Moines has contributed $9.8 million this year, but under the new funding formula, needs to see that number rise to $17.5 million in 2029. The two largest contributors to DART funding through property taxes are Des Moines and West Des Moines, with Des Moines planned to continue $9,846,235 in the 2024 fiscal year, or $103.84 per taxpayer of a $200,000 home, and West Des Moines at $5,216,974, which would be $94.19 per taxpayer. Other contribution numbers of note and the second highest contribution per taxpayer belong to Windsor Heights at $102.62, despite having the lowest total contribution number of 236,908. Ankeny, Clive, Johnston, and Urbandale will all surpass $1 million in contributions. DART provided information stating the average number of riders per hour on DART buses is 17, with the number rising to 27 at peak hours on its busiest routes. 61% of riders do not have a valid driver's license, and 61% also do not have a vehicle. 43% of DART riders have an annual household income of less than $20,000, and fewer than 60% have an annual income of less than $30,000. DART says some of the service cuts suggested, if they aren't able to gather more funding, would lead to longer wait hours and fewer route options. Two solutions were proposed. One would be to continue serving all of their current routes, but with less frequency. The other is serving fewer destinations, but serving those routes more frequently. DART named its higher ridership routes as 3, 6, 7, 15, 16, and 17, which would continue to run 7 days a week, but instead of routes running every 20 to 30 minutes, they would run every 60 minutes. DART says this would also heavily lower the amount of bus service on weekends and almost entirely eliminate it on Sundays. The Iowa legislature gave the city of Des Moines the option to increase its franchise fee, a tax on gas and electric bills, up to 2.5% in order to fund DART. This means the city could lower the amount it collects from property taxes for the next few years. If the city decides to continue to fund DART from property taxes only, the cut in services would take place. On November 28th, Grimes City Council voted to withdraw from their DART membership. The cost-benefit analysis just doesn't make any sense, said Grimes City Administrator Jake Anderson. We maybe have 13 unique riders in the community. Grimes contributes $645,919 of taxpayer money to DART, or $60.63 per taxpayer. At that cost, Grimes could buy a vehicle for each DART rider and be money ahead. In the most recent election, Des Moines voters approved the terminal expansion at the Des Moines International Airport. According to DART's numbers, DART served 3.2 million passengers, while the airport served slightly less than 3 million. Of course, this includes a lot of duplication. Des Moines City Council elections are in the books, and so are the campaign contributions. City View pulled the available donation numbers for those running for city council positions that had a committee viewable on the IECDB's Iowa Ethic and Campaign Disclosure Board searchable database starting from the beginning of 2023. Ward 1, winner of Ward 1's seat, Chris Coleman, raised $41,150.17 from 122 donations. His largest donation of $2,500 was reached four times by Douglas McAnich, Rick Tolikson, Galinsky Family Real Estate, and Dawn Thornton. Coleman also had two $1,500 donations from Will Knapp. Runner-up Rob Barron pulled together $19,656 for his campaign with 148 total donations. His largest was $1,000, of which he had four from Fred Hubbell, 6236 Laborers PAC, number 6334 Plumbers and Steamfitters Local Union 33, and Jack Hatch. Kathy Hellstern received a total of $1,615 from 13 donations, with the largest being $500 from Ta Yu Yang. R.J. Miller's campaign donation total came in at $764 from 9 donations, the largest being $400 from himself. Ward 2, incumbent and winner of the Ward 2 seat, Linda Westergaard, received the largest total amount of $90,829.04 for her campaign from 159 contributions. Westergaard's largest donation came from the Realtors Political Action Committee at $25,000. Runner-up Chelsea Lepley gained $32,623.05 for her campaign from a total of 296 contributions, with the largest donation coming in at $1,800 from FILDI Game Studio LLC. In Ward 4, from 105 donations, incumbent and winner of the Ward 4 seat, Joe Gatto, received $78,315 for his campaign, with the largest donation being $5,000 from Jay Elder II. Jason Bennell's campaign saw him raise $12,415.50 from 114 contributions. His largest donation was $1,500, which he received twice, both from Timothy Urban. At-large incumbent and winner of the at-large seat, Carl Voss, raised the second most amount of money between all city council candidates, with $85,654 from the most total donations, $397. Voss's largest donation came in at $5,000 from Richard Voss, and he received 26 donations of $1,000 or more. All in all, $336,021.76 were donated to the Des Moines City Council campaign in the year of 2023, with 1,363 contributions in total. In its October 20th edition, the Business Record published its Statement of Ownership, Management, and Circulation as required by Iowa law for paid subscription newspapers that receive discounted postal rates and taxpayer-funded advertising from public entities. According to the numbers in the statement, the weekly newspaper's total number of single copies published nearest to the filing date was 5,400, with the average number of copies during the last 12 months being 5,417. Meanwhile, the total paid distribution on average for each issue in the last 12 months was 2,582. According to the U.S. Census, as of 2021, there were approximately 17,000 employer establishments in Polk, Warren, and Dallas counties. Using those numbers, approximately 15% of all businesses in the three-county area are paid subscribers to the Business Record. But of course, they don't count the number of people they reach, because they reach the people that count. Seriously. In a recently released national report by Code.org, Iowa ranked as the seventh best state for providing computer science education in public schools K-12. During the 2022-2023 school year, Iowa schools increased the amount of foundational computer science opportunities they provided from 71% to 83%. In the 2017-2018 school year, that number was 48%. From the report, when it comes to geographical location, 93% of suburban schools offered computer science opportunities, rural schools were at 85%, and urban schools at 71%. DMAC broke ground on a new $9 million transportation institute on November the 14th. This is a two-phase project that begins with a new 8,600-square-foot building that will include classrooms, a three-story inspection bay, and student study space. The current institute's 12-acre concrete training course, where students practice driving techniques, will be replaced. The second phase of the project will be to tear down the existing DMAC Transportation Institute that was built in 1988. The building is set to be named after DMAC alum Dennis Albaugh, who donated $1 million towards the project. Other funding came from a $1 million grant from the state of Iowa, a $500,000 donation from the Kent Corporation, and a $50,000 contribution from Bob and Jane Sturgeon. And a report from the American Lung Association revealed that Iowa is the 12th worst state in the nation for lung cancer cases. The report also shows that Iowa is 10th best in early diagnosis and 11th best for lung cancer screenings. Iowa saw 61.14 new cases per 100,000, which is higher than the national average of 54.6 per 100,000. Why so much cancer in Iowa? According to the report, Iowa has some of the highest levels of radon in the country, which is the second leading cause of lung cancer. Next is a guest column by Mike Wellman, and it's entitled, "You've Come a Long Way, Buddy," an open letter to Caitlin Clark. "Dear Caitlin, where I was coming from was growing up a sports junkie in the pre-Title IX days. When I graduated from Roosevelt High School in 1972, there was no girls' basketball team. And Dowling, your alma mater, girls didn't even attend classes there, let alone play sports. The women's hoops program at the University of Iowa began while I was a student there, but I never saw the team play. Who cared? Not me, despite that I was doing work, study, writing mostly intramural sports, men's and women's, for the Daily Iowan as part of my financial aid package. Those were the days when the women's pro tennis tour was sponsored by Virginia Slims, a big tobacco brand whose ad jingle was, 'You've got your own cigarette now, baby. You've come a long, long way.' That was a long way ago. Where I was bound was Iowa City, the elder in a foursome of guys who spanned three generations, ages 5 to 69, off to see the crossover at Kinnick preseason scrimmage. Hawkeye hosting DePaul. For the youngest there, the journey was much shorter, no more than 100 miles and change, an hour and a half by car. Crossover is a clever play on the term for a deft sleight of hand by a dribbler, but it's also a nod to the change of venue from Carver Hawkeye Arena, which is sold out for the women's regular season, to the football stadium so the attendance record for a women's basketball game could be shattered. A stroke of marketing genius, like taking a wrecking ball to a glass ceiling. Marketing's your academic All-American major, I saw somewhere. You could just as well be teaching as taking classes in it, given your NIL, the acronym for Name, Image, Likeness Endorsements for Student Athletes, now permitted by the NCAA, resume. The roster of your marketing partners includes Nike, Hy-Vee, Goldman Sachs, the Small Business Administration, Tops, Bose, Buick, H&R Block, and just announced State Farm, hardly nil. Crossover also is an understated way of describing your fan base. Besides the scoring record book you're rewriting, TV viewership records are also undergoing extreme makeovers thanks to you. You talk often and proudly about the influence you have on young girls, rightly so, but your reflections on the overall broadening of the audience for women's hoops are general. Permit me, if I may, to state plainly that you are drawing guys in droves. Old ones like me, mostly remarkably. Here in Iowa, us boomer boys grew up when the girls' 6-on-6 game was central to rural popular culture. But it was a curio, really, compared to the game that you and your contemporaries play, what with rules like the one that limited ball handlers to no more than two dribbles. You could play offense or defense, but not both, front court or back court. No crossing over, in other words, the center line. Speaking of which, a friend of mine swears it was you who cut him off on the freeway this summer, swerving from your lane across his to make your exit ramp. No offense, but I can see you doing that. You know, going fast, get out of my way. That's how you roll. When I first hatched the idea to sit down to write you, fanboy to phenom, I thought it would be to plead that you stay at Iowa as long as you can, exercise your option for an extra year, a privilege granted since you debuted as a collegian when the pandemic limited play to practically empty gyms, set unbreakable records. You're already earning more as a student than most will in whatever careers they choose. Why hurry? Maybe I'd tell you how my wife and daughter and I stood in line last year to get into the Knapp Center when you and your terrific teammates were in town to play Drake. First time I ever bought tickets to a women's game. Or how amazed I was by the serpentine queue that started forming at dawn last June at Principal Park. You lured what was then the largest Iowa Cubs crowd in 4 years that night to a game you don't even play. People waited for hours for your autograph, and I was struck by how many were men decked out in number 22 Clark gear, just like the man who sat next to us that Sunday afternoon at Kinnick cradling his baby boy. But the game, an unofficial one that didn't count on either team's season record, an exhibition really, may have changed my mind. There was a vibe of too good to last in the crisp, cool air. A total of 55,646 of us, officially nearly doubling the previous women's attendance record, blissfully immune for an afternoon to the cognition of world affairs ranging from our own democracy's failing health to the acute emergencies in Ukraine and the Middle East. Never mind that we sat far beyond the ever-widening range of your three-point jump shots. You were still conspicuous, not only by virtue of your play, but also because of your shoes. "She's wearing Grinch Kobe's," shouted 12-year-old Xander in our crew when he spotted your neon green Nike kicks as the team trotted on to the out of the tunnel and jogged the length of the field to the temporary court installed at the north end of the stadium. Dorothy's famous ruby slippers from The Wizard of Oz came to mind. Later, when you jogged back at halftime, he ran down to the railing and begged you for them. "Maybe," you shouted back at him. "We'll have to see. These are expensive shoes." As per usual, you racked up a triple-double, which sounds like a glutton's regular order at the fast food drive-thru. 34 points, 11 rebounds, and 10 assists. Oh, I thought to myself, watching you hit Hannah Stolke in stride as she streaked down court like a gazelle, if only the football team had a passing attack like this. We'd planned to leave after the third quarter to beat traffic and get home before dark, but the two boys insisted we see the game through. Xander wanted to follow up about the shoes, and Jack, my grandson, just wanted to get up as up close to you as possible at game's end. Besides being a Swiftie, he saw Taylor Swift's Eras Tour concert film over the weekend too, he's also a Clarkie. All four of us are, so we decided to endure the post-game traffic, and as the game's last minutes ticked away, a favorite Robert Frost poem came to mind, "Nothing Gold Can Stay," including you, Caitlin. I looked up an ESPN mock draft for the WNBA, and it's got you as the number one pick by the Indiana Fever if you decide to forego the extra year at Iowa. If the romantic rumors about you and Connor McCaffrey are true, that might be a great fit since he's working for the NBA's Indiana Pacers now. And you can always come back. When you turn 30, you can even run for governor. The WNBA season doesn't begin until May, about the same time as the state legislature adjourns. I can even imagine Cyclone fans crossing over and voting for you. So, I guess instead of a plea that you stay, this turns out to be a lengthy thank you note for the memories. Those already banked and those still to come. And the raised consciousness. and the outreach to Jack, that magic touch as you passed on your way to the locker room after the game on October the 15th, 2023, when most of the record-breaking crowd was gone. So were the shoes. You were in stocking feet by then. Tough luck, Xander, who proceeded to write you privately in the days following the game. After we got home, I looked up your bio and discovered that your 22nd birthday, your golden one, is next month. Isn't 22 on Taylor Swift's hit list as well as your uniform? You two really have a lot in common. Just saying. Signed, Mike Wellman, University of Iowa, class of 1976. Now I'll read the Joe's Neighborhood column. It's written by Joe Wieg, and the title is The Cost of Concert Blues. Two high school boys from Iowa City are not buying two tickets for $10,890 each. The tightly sealed cardboard box from the attic is an accumulation of orphaned items too dear to trash. There's a First Communion missal, a holy water font to hang on my wall, a kindergarten report card from St. Thomas Aquinas with 9 graded categories, one being the ability to talk to God, for which my heretical soul got an A, you doubters. Old passports and, what's this, concert tickets? The line stretches long and meandering from the entrance to Hilton Coliseum in Ames through the exit through the east parking lot, across the South Skunk River to eventually come to rest in my memory more than 50 years later. I do remember the smell, the pungency of marijuana as it drifts from the crowd while my buddy and I try unsuccessfully to look cool standing in line with our eyes down and our hands deep in our pockets. Once we are seated, everyone around us is laughing and talking and passing drinks back and forth. College kids, for sure. We sit in our brand new bell-bottom pants, eyes wide, and pass pop back and forth. Yup, high school kids, for sure. From stage left comes our man, alone, shadowed, quiet. He sits at the piano and pauses. Then he bends over the keys and plays. Gradually, the music loops around, and his voice joins in. Blue Jean Baby, L.A. Lady, seamstress for the band, pretty-eyed, pirate smile, you'll marry a music man. Elton John's Tiny Dancer, and we forget all our anxieties, worries, cares, and desires. We are no longer separate from the crowd. We are floating in the air, driven by this strange man on the big stage wearing cartoonish glasses. We are transported. And the cost of this ecstasy? Well, back in 1972, it was $4. Yes, 4 big ones, tax included. That's not happening today, even accounting for the increase of the minimum wage from $1.60 an hour in 1972 to $7.25 an hour in 2023. 3 hours of work actually paid for my ticket back in 1972. 3 hours of work today would barely pay for a reusable water bottle sold at a Taylor Swift concert. Taylor Swift brings her Eras Tour to Kansas City in less than a month, and resale tickets here only shot up in price since they sold out on Ticketmaster in November of 2022. According to StubHub, prices range from $1,047 to $7,166 for the remaining 473 tickets for July 7th, and $1,100 to $10,890 for one of 509 tickets available for July 8th. Craziness has happened. Two high school boys from Iowa City are not buying two tickets for $10,890 each. Please. Of course, the Taylor Swift ticket sales were outsized. We all know that, but even to see Elton John in Denver last year would have been a hard swallow. Elton John's Farewell Yellow Brick Road Tour, which he says will be his last, is coming to Denver's Ball Arena at 8 p.m. this Friday. Last-minute ticket grabbers will pay about $300 at the cheapest end, or upward of $4,800 at the most expensive. What has happened here? Who can possibly afford this? So I asked a pro. I've been doing radio since God was just a little girl, Ron Sorensen laughingly explains in his deep, melodious voice with the calming notes of a meditation guru at a day-long retreat. Ron Sorensen is general manager of KFMG Radio and president of the board of directors. Eventually, I run the store. Which means? That means I'm general manager, staff announcer, principal underwriting salesperson, fundraiser, copywriter, production director, I do promotions, and I take out the trash. Okay, Ron, based on your long years in the music world, what's going on with these music concert ticket prices? I did some digging, mainly because I was curious. Today, average concert ticket price is $252, but in 1970, a big-name show, a Beatles show or a Led Zeppelin show, was charging $10 to $12. But remember that gasoline in 1970 was 36 cents a gallon, so one cause for what's happening today is clearly inflation. And? Well, another factor is that 32% of ticket costs are currently fees and services, and don't forget the resellers. They want to sell for more than they paid. It's StubHub, but also individuals just trying to make a buck. Yikes, that's a chunk. Another factor, I believe, especially for baby boomers, are that they are doing pretty well and are willing to pay $1,000 to $1,500 to see Paul McCartney for the last time, so they get the VIP treatment and don't have to mingle with the hoi polloi. But what about all the young people attending a concert like Taylor Swift? Ha! Those concert goers have grandparents who are baby boomers. I wouldn't be surprised if there isn't a substantial parent and grandparent support. And don't forget that Taylor Swift is a phenom. It's a show, a circus, not just a band up there playing. I thank Ron for his thoughts, and he returns to his microphone while I return home to my box of memories and old concert tickets. Wow, look at this. Don McLean of American Pie fame at C.Y. Stevens Auditorium in 1973. Who knew? And the cost? $3. Shaking my head and deciding once again not to trash all these treasures, I seal up the box and take it back to the attic. Then I sit on the attic stairs, an old man perch, and consider the wonderfully sweet smell of melancholy. And that does it for this episode of City View. We've been reading from the December issue. Thanks for sharing your time with IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. If you have any questions about this or any other IRIS program, please give us a call at area code 515-243-6833. Thanks again for listening.